Welcome to Torah Timecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Blaustein, and today we're going to be studying Nehemiah chapter 7. In chapter 6, we learn that the walls of Jerusalem were completed, yet there were three incidents of opposition trying to intimidate Nehemiah. Despite a blow to his morale, Nehemiah is not weakened. And so in the beginning of chapter 7, we learn that the finishing touches are now complete as the gates of the city are hung. As verse 1 tells us, "Vahi ka'asher nivneta ha'choma ve'a'amid hadlatot," when the wall was rebuilt and I set up the doors, "Vaypakdu ha'sha'arim v'hamishorarim v'halaviyim," tasks were then assigned to the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites. And once again, we have the same feeling we had in chapter 6. It seems like the nevuah of Yeshayahu of a rebuilt Jerusalem with walls is now complete. As it says in Yeshayahu in chapter 62, verse 6, "Al chomotayach Yerushalayim hefkadeti shomrim kol hayom v'chol halayla, tamid lo yechashu hamaskirim et Hashem al meilachem." Upon your walls, O Jerusalem, I have set sentries who shall never be silent by day or by night. O you, the Eternal One's remembrancers, take no rest. And indeed, these same words from Yeshayahu are echoed in the words I just read in Nehemiah chapter 7, verse 1. "Vaypakdu hasho'arim v'hamishorarim v'halaviyim," when the assigned tasks to the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites. But this allusion to Yeshayahu in the words hifkadati vaipakdu, and whatever excitement we might have about the final touches of the wall being complete, seems to then fall flat. Because the next few psukim, instead of detailing the glory of Jerusalem with walls surrounding her, deal with the safety measures Nehemiah takes. It seems clear that even though Nehemiah showed in chapter 6 he was not intimidated by Sanballat and his allies, he still needs to remain incredibly vigilant, worried that in fact a full-scale war and attack could break out at any moment. So Nehemiah instructs his brother, a man named Hanani, and another individual, confusingly named Hanania, with some instructions regarding the opening and closing times of the city gates and some key precautions to take. He says in verse 3, "Va'omar lahem, lo ypatchu sh'arei Yerushalayim ad chom ha'shemesh, va'ad hem omdim yagifu hadlatot, ve'echozu v'ha'amed mishmarot yoshvei Yerushalayim ish b'mishmaro v'ish neged beito." I said to them, "The gates of Jerusalem are not to be opened until the heat of the day, and before you leave your posts, let your doors be closed and barred, and assign the inhabitants of Jerusalem to watches, each man to his watch, and each in front of his own house." The exact instructions are somewhat unclear, but it seems that Nehemiah is telling them to keep the city gates closed in the heat of the day when everybody is sleepy and less vigilant. Nehemiah also ensures that further safety measures are to be taken, like drafting people from the city and assigning them to take turns on guard duty. Nehemiah does something incredibly smart, which is to ask people to take responsibility for the section of their wall opposite their residence, so the people guarding the city have real skin in the game. As they stand watch on the wall, they know that they're guarding their own homes and their own families. So what now? The wall is complete, the gates are hung. Nehemiah has already emphasized that he is loyal to Persia. It would seem like Nehemiah's mission is complete. He can retire. But Nehemiah, ever the doer and achiever, shares his next challenge in verse 4. "V'ha'ir rachavat yadayim ugdola, v'ha'am ma'at betocha, v'ein batim bnuyim." The city was broad and large, and the people in it were few. Houses were not yet built. Now Nehemiah focuses his efforts on repopulating the city of Jerusalem. Despite what Zerubbabel had accomplished when he rebuilt the first Beit HaMikdash, most people during that time didn't actually live inside Jerusalem. They lived outside Jerusalem, within the province of Judah, but outside Jerusalem. So the space enclosed by the newly rebuilt city walls was kind of empty. Rechavat Yadayim, literally wide of hands. You can stretch out your hand way too far. Nehemiah then says that he had a moment of divine inspiration. As he says in verse 5, "Vayiten Elokai alibi," God put it into my mind. He assembles all the nobles and their families to create a registry. Probably the purpose of this was to encourage people to take note of their original ancestral holdings in Judah and Jerusalem and return. But before Nehemiah gathers the people and does exactly that, we are told that Nehemiah then finds the genealogical records written many years earlier by Zerubbabel's generation. Zerubbabel, who was the first leader of the Second Temple era, led the people in building the altar and later had started work on the temple. These efforts are described in the Book of Ezra, and the Book of Ezra includes long lists of how many people Zerubbabel took with him from Babel and the supplies they took with them. Now, I'll remind you, as I noted in previous chapters, that there is a statement by Chazal saying that Nehemiah, in fact, was Zerubbabel. It makes understanding the chronology of this chapter and Nehemiah somewhat confusing because it definitely seems to present them as two distinct individuals. Anyway, Nehemiah finds the list of genealogical records from Zerubbabel's generation. Finding the list was probably super helpful for Nehemiah because it lists people's ancestors and can assist Nehemiah in his current work of creating a registry. But here's the thing. This list in Nehemiah chapter 7 is pretty much a repetition, almost exactly with a few minor differences, of the list that the Book of Ezra describes. And the next 68 verses in Nehemiah chapter 7 are basically just a repeat of a chapter in the Book of Ezra. Nehemiah, as the narrator, could have just said, "To help me figure out people's ancestral holdings, I found those records. You want more information about that list? See Ezra chapter 2. Instead, the entire list of who came up from Babel to Jerusalem during the times of Zerubbabel, their sum totals, their donkeys, their camels, and heads of their ancestral houses are repeated. Why does Nehemiah repeat this list? It was kind of a struggle to read this list the first time around in the Book of Ezra, as it's honestly not that interesting. And now we see it twice. Well, for starters, as I noted earlier, it's important to acknowledge that the lists aren't exactly the same. There is a discrepancy of 1,271 between the two lists when you add up the individual groups, even though the overall totals given by both groups of the number of people who Zerubbabel presided over is the same, 42,360. So the discrepancy may be the result of a scribal error, or maybe, as Ibn Ezra says, "Kiakatuv yudaber keneged harov," the author of Nehemiah was exact in the generalities, and maybe discrepancies occurred because some of the people were known by two different names. But we can't let these discrepancies distract us from the main question. Why the repetition of this list? Why does the Book of Nehemiah include the census of all who came up from Babel to Jerusalem decades earlier? To answer this question, I'd like to zoom out. As we noted in the introduction to chapter 1 of Nehemiah, Nehemiah is not the real name of this Sefer. It's really joined with Sefer Ezra. Chazal have only one name for this book. It's the Book of Ezra. There are three major movements to the Book of Ezra. Movement 1, in Sefer Ezra, describes Zerubbabel's Aliyah, his journey from Babel to Jerusalem to build the altar and begin building the temple. And here's where we have that first list of all the returnees from Babel to Jerusalem. That's Movement 1, all about the rededication of the temple. Movement 2, also in what we know of as Sefer Ezra, is focused on Ezra acting as a leader, refocusing the people on the laws, the mitzvot, in other words, a rededication to the Torah. And now, Movement 3 is rebuilding the wall, what we think of as the Book of Nehemiah. And here is where we see some of the goals of the Book of Nehemiah. Rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem was perhaps the most contentious and difficult part. It faced the most opposition from all of the three movements. The temple, the Torah, the wall, all three of these are key aspects of a complete return to Jewish life in Israel. What's a temple without the Torah? But rebuilding the walls represented a chance at living securely, a chance at living independently. Nehemiah's point is that in order to really be secure in the temple, and in order to really be able to focus on observance of Torah, Jerusalem has to be rebuilt and must be the focus. Just having a Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem without a rebuilt Jerusalem isn't enough, isn't complete. And so Nehemiah chapters 1 through 7 are all about rebuilding the wall and repopulating the city. And now, in chapter 7 of Nehemiah, we're closing this third movement, a movement that began with the Book of Ezra chapter 1. And so, zooming out, we're closing this section of three movements: dedication to the temple, dedication to the Torah, and now dedication to the wall. And we're closing it by repeating the list of returnees from Babel. It's how this movement all began. It's like these three major movements are bookended, beginning with the list of returnees in the times of Zerubbabel and ending with the list of returnees during the times of Zerubbabel. We're reminding ourselves of the three main aspects that together create a successful ge'ulah, a successful return to Jerusalem: temple, the Torah, and filling the actual space. Census in the beginning and the census at the end highlights these three key movements. And having the same or nearly identical list bookending these three movements create the impression that the return to the temple, return to the Torah, and return to the walled city are meant to be collapsed. They're not really meant to be seen as three distinct historical time periods, but maybe more accurately, three interconnected goals, all supporting each other. Each points on a triangle and playing an essential role of the return to Zion. So as we've seen in chapter 7, what might at first glance be a boring list, a tangent, is actually the text's way of pointing at a really crucial theme. The book of Ezra, the book of Nehemiah, is really one book, and that point will be emphasized even more in the next chapter, chapter 8, when Ezra himself, as the individual, leads a commemoration ceremony to celebrate the rededication and completion of these three goals. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat Rose Forman, Razel Rachel Bat Aryeh Lieb, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.